say, life is not a meaning. Life is an opportunity. You find the meaning of life at the end of life. That's how he talked. So he was, you find the meaning of life at the end of life.
No, I disagree.
Yeah, that's what he would say. But also the idea, and I'm glad that we're recording this, because the idea that finding meaning comes from what you do rather than who you are is a common myth, I think. I don't even know if it's a myth, but it's sort of a belief. And people think that you find meaning by I found the right job, or I found, you know, the right class that really speaks to me, or I found a book that I love. And that gives me purpose, you know, and then I'm connected to that purpose of how I feel. But the reason why, you know, but the reason why people are stuck in things where they feel like they don't have meaning is because they're not doing it from a place of who they are.
Yes, they're stepping out of who they are, or it's just like sort of an aside. Do you want to introduce the show?
What is the show? I'm confused. Oh, no, there's a title to the show. The title The title is called Dear Anxiety. The reason why we're talking about finding meaning today is because we talk about how people relate to their thoughts and feelings. Parents, kids, teens, grandparents, everybody. How we all relate to our thoughts and feelings sort of determines what we're going to do in the path of our lives. You know, how our awareness, the awareness of the choices that you have about your thoughts, about your feelings, about how you communicate. And certainly finding meaning is something that's I think it's one of the biggest topics that we've ever covered, and it's sort of hard to get your arms around, but we're going to talk about it. And
we're
also going to
try it anyway. We're going to go for it.
Yeah, we're going to go for it, and we're going to give you techniques, tools that you can use to help your kids, to help yourselves connect to purpose, connect to an idea like purpose and finding meaning and finding things that speak to you and how you navigate that. Because I don't think a lot of parents or anybody really thinks about that consciously. So today, that's what we're going to do. I'm Ed Krasnick, and along with me is a lady who needs no introduction. No, is someone who first she's...
Do it anyway.
She's my friend. She's also... She works in the field of applied positive psychology, studied this with the father of this field, Marty Seligman, at the University of Pennsylvania. So applied positive psychology. And then, but that's not enough. No, there's more. She goes on to start a business that helps people with resilience, teaches people through animation and creative play, teaches them about anxiety relief, about how to stress better, about anger transformation, about communication, about parenting, and it's called Go Zen. And she is here, I believe. It's Renee Jane.
I am here. Thank you. Thank you very much. Yes, I have arrived.
Okay.
I was thinking deeply about what you were saying, and then I realized, oh my goodness, I need to speak. Yes, this is a podcast. I should say something. It's not telepathic. Not yet.
We stress the word yet. So what you said, finding meaning, to me, and I was like, wow, this is pretty interesting. What is it about finding meaning that's so hard to get your arms around? And why is it that most people don't really think about this consciously? Specifically, I would think parents don't think about relating to kids in that manner.
You know, I think when you have a child, you pretty much assume for the most part, whether they're going to be going to a traditional school or they're going to be homeschooled, that they're going to get some sort of education. You would like to give them some sort of education, right? And what is the point of that education? What are we thinking in our heads is going to happen after they go to school?
You're going to be able to go to college.
Okay.
And then you're going to be able to, from college, figure out what you want to do for work.
Okay.
Or career.
Okay.
And then you're going to go do that thing.
And then what?
Well, if I had thought about that, I would have lived a different life. No. Of course, if I thought about that, I wouldn't be where I am. No, and then what? Well, here's the thing, okay? In school, in learning, no one ever said, "Gee, you're good at this, maybe you should do it more." Gee, it seems like you like this. Why don't you explore that? No one ever said that to me. What they said was, they said, get this grade, complete this, and then go on to the next thing. And so as a result, you're not learning about who you are. You're learning about how to complete things and how to go
absolutely.
On.
You know, and there is something to be said about completing things, right? Starting something and finishing it. I think it's a really good skill to have. But I think that we think that we don't need to talk about these topics with our kids from a really young age. We do ask them big questions like, what do you want to be when you grow up? And I do think that whether we do this explicitly or somehow it's subtle, that there is some sort of roadmap or some sort of map that we've created for all of our kids. And maybe it's a map that we were given. Maybe it was written or not written, but it's pretty much what you described. You go to school, you go to college, you get a good job. You know, maybe you get married and have 2.2 kids and some kind of picket fence or so. Do you have a picket fence, Ed?
I do. I have a picket fence. It's a white picket fence. I stand behind it. I don't have a home.
Just the fence.
Yeah. No, I have a fence. Yeah.
So, you know, because why do you do all of those things? I mean, what is the ultimate goal that we are seeking?
The ultimate goal that you're seeking is happiness.
Happiness, right? Yeah. So I believe that there is, you know, we get up in the morning and we go from a very young age and we check things off our list. And the reason we check things off our list, so we eventually accumulate all of these things that we've done, accomplishments, so that we can get our diploma and go get a good job and go do all of those things so that we land in this place, destination happiness.
Right.
Okay, but let me ask you this question.
Mm-hmm.
If you have a map and you have a destination, let's say the Bahamas, you take a flight and you land in that place, then where would you be? I know it sounds silly.
I would be in the Bahamas.
You would be in the Bahamas, right?
Yeah.
If you have a map and X marks the spot is happiness and you land there, then where should you be?
You should be in happiness.
You should be in happiness, and it shouldn't disappear, right?
Right.
If you accomplish a goal, and after the goal, you have your destination set to be happy, then you should be there. But it is fundamentally flawed because emotions don't work that way. They are temporary in nature.
Right.
You cannot be one thing. Have you ever been one feeling forever? Has anyone listening ever been one feeling forever?
No, it's not possible.
You might have certain feelings that come and go more often than others, but it is not possible. And so a lot of times we set ourselves up to think, well, I'm going to do all of these things and then I will reach this destination happiness. And I'm sure that you've heard about the lotto winners that end up depressed and suicidal. They think they want all this money and happiness, and then where's the happiness? Or Michael Phelps, for example, that has won 8 trillion gold medals, right? He ended up anxious and depressed. So I'm not saying if you achieve a big goal that, you know, you end up anxious and depressed. I don't think that that is true. But what I am saying is that we set ourselves up on this particular path. And a lot of times this path runs so fast. It's the rat race. We're going so quickly that we do not have a moment to stop and smell the roses and enjoy the journey because we're really waiting for that huge payoff at the end. But the payoff is an illusion. It's an illusion, right?
Yes, yes.
And I lived my life like this. I think a lot of people have lived their lives like this. And so I'm making no judgment whatsoever. My parents came here from India, came to the United States from India in 1969. Literally gave me the, my everyday growing up gave me the, we came here for a better life for you speech, right? So I understand this roadmap. You know, I lived that roadmap. I got the good grades. I went to a good school. Then I went to a good graduate school. I got married. I did all of those things. And I ended up a complete mess. And I was so utterly confused. Wait a second. I followed this roadmap. Why am I not incredibly happy every single moment of every single day? I was pissed. I was angry. Yeah. I was actually angry that I wasn't happy, you know, all the time or most of the time. I'm like, this is wrong. I did all of the things you told me to do. What the heck? Why aren't I happy? It's because I disregarded some very big things. One is that no life is linear. Have you ever seen a linear life? Anyone's.
Not usually.
We take detours, we take breaks, we get confused, we make mistakes. And I feel like for our kids, we don't allow for that anymore. There's a confusion that that is not part of the process of life. And I really fundamentally believe that the goal, the overarching goal of happiness, while I am not saying that there's something wrong with happiness, I'm saying that making that and chasing it relentlessly is causing some massive problems.
Well, yeah, because you're, first of all, you know, ignoring feelings and thought, you know, ignoring being human, you know,
that's
focusing on
a goal. When you're human, right?
Yeah, it is a real problem, you know, and also I used to say this on stage a lot, but I really believe it. We live in a place where there's a credo that's life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Notice that it's not life, liberty, and happiness. It's the pursuit of happiness. And the problem with the pursuit of happiness is that it will kill you. And it makes you miserable because you're pursuing something that can only be found inside of you. So you already have an impossibility. The impossibility is that if I do something that's outside myself, I will feel something inside. And the idea is you have to feel it inside and bring it outside. And no one teaches you that. And that's the problem with life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. There is nothing more miserable than pursuing happiness. Nothing will make
you
more unhappy.
You can see this actually when kids come into the world. Exactly what you're saying is that there is no pursuit, right? They go into states of flow where they're in their imaginary worlds and they're playing and they're fully whole and abundant and happy, right? There is no pursuit of anything aside from being in the moment. So I think you're absolutely right. That's such a unique way to look at it. This pursuit is really what is so incredibly difficult. And every day we get to the end of the day, it's almost like stepping on a scale where we measure our progress. Well, am I any closer? I don't think I'm any closer. I think I've taken 3 steps back, right? We're constantly measuring. And so I think what you said is so incredibly important. And it sounds trite, but it doesn't come to us in a trite way, right? It takes a lot of, I think, falling down and experimentation and a lot of introspection to realize that what our kids need, honestly, is within them. And while I am not saying that they shouldn't pursue goals, I absolutely think everybody should pursue goals and they should develop mastery in certain skills, right? And they should work hard and they should overcome obstacles and they should be gritty. But what I am saying is I really think that we need to change the goalpost because right now, this thing about happiness and the relentless pursuit of it is leading to mass chaos internally. So what do we do? Right?
What,
we talk about on the show, what do we do?
And I'm what sorry, do we do? Eddie. How do you address that? And also, you know, should we be, you know, do you ask a new question, which is not what do you want to do when you grow up? It's who do you want to be when you grow up?
Who do you want to be when you grow up? What do you want to contribute to the world when you grow up?
Why? Yeah. What's the why? What is it that connects you to a greater goal, a greater purpose? And you know, we'll talk about the skills that you can, you know, things that you can do in just a minute. But there's a friend of mine who runs a part of a university in Texas, and she teaches these students. And part of it is a mental health program. She teaches actors. And one of the questions that she teaches people to ask is to get themselves into the highest version of their brain, the decision making, the reasoning, the prefrontal cortex is the question, what is my highest purpose? And that when you ask that, it physically changes everything in your body. You ask it when you're in the midst of despair and you're worried and you're concerned and you ask yourself a question internally, what's my highest purpose? You actually go up into your frontal, you go up into your brain in a new way, and all of a sudden, it takes you out of that struggle world.
I love that. What's my highest purpose?
What is my highest purpose?
And for those of you who are listening, who have really little kids, so I have a 5 and a 6-year-old and are thinking to yourself, well, this isn't relevant to me. I can't talk to my kids about what their highest purpose is. I think we absolutely can if we change the language, you know? I think if we relate it to things, a family unit, for example, we relate it to things like chores and what are we contributing to the household, right? How are we doing this together? I think that we can extrapolate from things that are meaningful and relevant to them to be able to make this conversation accessible to them. Because I really think that we need to change the conversation and to change the end result of what we're looking for. So forget pursuing happiness. I felt shame growing up, so much shame that I wasn't happier. Because every time my parents would see that I was anxious or worried, I thought I was bad, that I was doing something bad for having feelings. And it is why now in my adult life, I pursue meaning. If there's going to be a pursuit of anything on a daily basis for me, it's going to be meaning. It's going to be contributing something to the world that's bigger than myself. And I don't think that that's too big of an idea for any kid of any age, honestly.
Very interesting. And so in terms of your own family, I mean, how do you demonstrate this? How do you have this conversation with your kids?
So how do I have the conversation with my kids? My kids want to know why I'm leaving, you know, in the morning, what I'm doing, what's more important than staying here at home with us? Or, you know, it's summertime right now when I'm talking about this, when we're recording this. And so they're like, where are you going? You know, what's happening? And so I literally will draw pictures for them of the work that I do. And I'll draw an earth, you know, without ego and say to them, I'm hoping to reach a lot of people in lots of different parts of the world that are just like you. And I'll draw pictures of other little kids and I'll say, you know, today I'm going to record something and I hope it's going to go to this country and reach this kid, because some of those kids are having the same things that you're going through. One of them might be scared to go to sleep. One of my kids is scared of the dark, for example. And so I will say things like that to them. I will do things like that to them. And I will even say things that I know they're going a little bit above their head, but hopefully we'll just soak, you know, they'll soak it in and one day they'll understand it. And I'll say to them, you know, I'm trying to do something really meaningful. And I hope that when you grow up, that you're able to do that too. And right now, when you're at home, you know, and we have a lovely nanny who they're at home with right now. When you're at home, you're going to be doing meaningful things for your brain. Like you're going to be playing. And that's so important. So I try to bring meaning into their life in different ways. But I will draw pictures for them to show them what I'm doing and why that's meaningful. And sometimes, you know, they're still grabbing my leg and there's a little bit of separation anxiety, but at least I know I'm trying to bring it to their level.
And how do they respond usually when you, what's the energy like when you start talking about those things?
My daughter that's six, she looks at me like she gets it, you know, and sometimes in the moment, she doesn't express that back to me. So in the moment, there might be like some screaming or she'll look at me and I'm thinking to myself, oh, I'm doing a good job. Like she's really getting this. And then she'll be like, Mama, what's for lunch? She'll just be six. Did you leave me a peanut butter sandwich or whatever? But then there are other times where she will repeat it back to me. Like, oh, mommy, I know, or I'll overhear her telling someone else. My mommy goes to work and she's trying to make meaning in the world. And the other kid's probably like, what?
That's great.
What's happening? But I know that she's hearing it, you know, and my son's a little bit younger. He's hearing it too. And I just keep reinforcing it. And then again, like I mentioned, chores or cleaning up or things that we contribute to the house. So, you know, part of meaning is doing something in service of others. And so I try to relate working on something meaningful to that, you know, as a family unit, like what makes meaning for our family. And so that's another way that I talk about it at home.
It's just amazing. You know, we have these things about take your kid to work week and we have, you know, do your kids know what you do for a living? And it's really not what you do for a living. It's why you do, why you're doing these things and what your view of it is and what your intention is in the world. And some people, you know, are surviving, you know, most people are surviving. They're trying to pay the bills. So they're actually not doing the thing that they would most love to do for work, or they may not have a conscious thing of like, I'm going to, you know, change the world with, you know, I want to help people, you know, with their thoughts and their feelings and help them to live easier and live happier. They may not have that. But if they start asking questions about what they do in their lives and what it, you know, the impact on the world, no matter what you do, it connects to something. It connects to someone. And it's about you valuing, you know, what you do and what you're trying to do.
Well, I think one point I want to pick up on and what you just said is so important. I don't think that meaning necessarily has to come from, you know, working in some kind of social service for work, right? Or social good aspect for work. I think when you look at the research, there are different ways to cultivate meaning. So someone that I know that went through my graduate program, I should say, her name is Emily Smith, and she wrote a book called The Power of Meaning. And one of the things that she talks about, actually four of the things that she talks about, are the pillars of meaning. So there are different pathways to find meaning. So Emily Smith talks about sense of belonging, meaning in relationships, where you feel like you really matter to others and you're valued by them, that gives you meaning in your life, right? Sense of purpose. So having something really worthwhile to do with your time. And I think that's what we were talking about earlier. And this is a pursuit that kind of organizes your life and involves making a contribution to others, but it doesn't necessarily need to be the entirety of your quote unquote career or the work that you do. And then there's transcendence, right? Those moments where you are kind of lifted above daily life. Like, so if you're standing, for example, in front of the Grand Canyon and you have those moments of awe, right? This is a way to find meaning. And storytelling is another pillar. So storytelling is really about the story that you're telling yourself about your life and how you have become the version of you that you are. It's sort of your personal myth of meaning. So I find that there are different pathways to cultivating meaning. And I love the research that she did. I thought it was amazing.
That's fascinating. That's very interesting. And so pragmatically, everyday life, what are some things that you could do? Now, we're talking to parents, but we're talking to kids. We're talking to everybody. What are some things that you can do for yourself to cultivate meaning in a pragmatic way? What would you do?
I love the Japanese have this map that they create. It looks like a Venn diagram almost, you know, those when the circles intersect with one another. Mm-hmm. And it's called, I think I'm going to pronounce this incorrectly. I think it's called Ikigai. It's Ikigai. And it's four little circles that you can fill out, essentially. One of the circles says, what do you love? You know, what are the things in your life that you love? And I think this is definitely something you can do with your kids. And then another one that intersects with it says, what does the world need? Right? So you're adding it, what does the world need? You know, the world needs clean water all over the world. You know, the world needs, you know, better ways to have electricity everywhere. So whatever, all the things that the world needs, kindness, empathy. What are you good at is another circle, right? So all of these, again, intersect. And then the last one is, what can you be paid for? So this is the more traditional question that we ask our kids, probably, what do you want to be when you grow up? Sometimes, depending on the age of your child, that question's appropriate. Sometimes maybe it has to wait until later. But all four of these circles intersect. And in the space that they intersect is called Ikigai. And that roughly translates to your reason for being. And I think that this is such a beautiful way to kind of introduce meaning into your kids' lives. And this, we'll put it in the show notes. You know, we'll put a picture of it in the show notes. So you can always check that out at gozen.com/dearanxiety. But that's a practical thing that can be done.
That sounds like, first of all, it sounds like fun. Secondly, it's very creative. And third, it is something that you can do with kids, you can do with yourself. You know, I'd like to do it myself, but just those questions, you know, how often do you sit down and you just think, what am I good at? What do I love? And let's say that, you know, let's say I was a spouse or a kid or, you know, I was in relationship with somebody in my family, and the person, you know, had no relationship to what we're talking about now. How would you introduce it to them? How would you present it to them? And how would you engage in that dialogue?
It would depend on the dynamic with the person. I would probably talk about it in terms of myself. You know, I would start there. So I'm sure many people who are listening have had those transition points in their life where they were seeking meaning, where it became more clear that they were seeking meaning. I feel like as humans, we're always seeking meaning. But you know, those parts in your life where maybe you went through a breakup, or maybe you were, it's usually happening in transition times. Maybe you're transitioning careers, and or maybe you're going from a career to say, hey, you know, I'm thinking about starting a family and I might not go back to a career for a while. So these big changes in your life where you really start to self-reflect and think, what is the meaning of all of this? What is the meaning of my life, right? And I think kids do that too. And so if I were introducing this to someone who just was disconnected to this topic, I mean, again, I wouldn't jump in and kind of impose it. If they were talking about, I don't know, whatever, Monday Night Football, I wouldn't be like, hey, so have you thought about the pursuit of meaning? I would probably introduce it in a way that made sense, right? If there was an opening to talk about it. And I would talk about myself, and I would talk about the discomfort of not knowing. Because I feel like a lot of kids are going through a sampling process in their life where they're just trying things and figuring things out. And sometimes they feel like they have to know. And sometimes even adults feel like they have to know. I think it's why we go through a midlife crisis, right? It's right. Like, how could I be 40-something, 50-something, 60-something, whatever the time period is, and not know what I'm doing with my life? That is just not the way it's quote-unquote supposed to be.
How much of that is a reflective, you know, like there, of course, many people are able to say, this is what I do well. This is what I love to do. This is what I'm going to try to work at and make a mission in my life. And this is how I'm going to live my life. But many people in today's world end up trying to just pay the bills, and they forget about who they are in the process.
I think, look, paying bills is important, right? You have to pay the bills, and you have to feed yourself, and you feed your family, and those basic needs need to be met. But I think that what happens is we become like, either I'm living my life in, I become very black and white, let's just say. I want to live my life in full, purposely and passionately. And if I'm not doing it in every single way, then I'm just not doing it. But that's not true. You can have micro moments of meaning in any kind of work. And trust me, I've worked a million different jobs, right? When I was growing up, I was actually talking to someone about this the other day. I'm like, I worked in a shoe store. I worked in a department store. I worked as a telemarketer. I think I had so many different jobs. And were they all the most meaningful? Absolutely not. But in each of those, I could have found meaningful relationships. There were definitely micro moments of meaning. And I was always thinking about and pursuing other ways to expand the meaning, right? And so I was always like, I know I want to expand this little moment of meaning I'm having working at the Lord and Taylor Clearance Center, by the way.
Fantastic.
In the fitting department is what I did. In the fitting room, department.
Oh my God.
Yeah. So I took, like, people would bring in 1,000 dresses and I would put them away or help them pick them out. But sometimes, and I don't mean to say that you could make something, you know, lemonade out of lemons, but sometimes I would help someone find the perfect outfit, and it literally would be so meaningful just because they would be so happy and excited. And so I think you can find moments of meaning everywhere. You have to be on the lookout for them, though, you know?
Yeah. And sometimes it really is, you come into an experience and it's the people that you meet there. I've had some of the strangest jobs in show business. No one. I mean, it's, I can't even say it. I can't even tell you what it
is.
Hey,
tell us.
Let's see. Well, there's a lot of them, but I was, well, okay. So I'll give you the range of jobs. Okay. So I was on The Sopranos. And I was working with James Gandolfini, okay? And I was in Lodi, New Jersey on the set. And I came onto the set, and the guy who plays Uncle Junior, Dominic Chianese, he greets me this way. He says, Eddie, what do you like to eat? You like Lona Dune? You like Twix? What do you like to eat? They'll give you whatever you want here. Come over here and meet Jimmy Gandolfini. He's with us. So you're talking to the mob, basically. So I worked with those guys. And he literally said,
the mob eats Twix?
Yeah. He said, what, you like Lona Dune? And so he literally said that. So I had that experience. And then the other experience was, I was on a reality show, working on a reality show, where I was sitting in a garage all day. And the show worked in a way where you had to send instructions to a family that was in the house. They were filming them. It was a dating show, and you sent instructions via fax. That's how long ago the show was. And my sole job was to hit the button on the fax machine and send the fax.
Hey, that's an important job.
It is, but there was a guy who was standing there and he would go like this. He'd say, not yet. Mm-mm. Nope. 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 Okay, now. And I lived for that moment. And that was it. But then I also had a job working in the Children's Museum in Boston, where I did theater games around exhibits. And I learned how to be an exhibit planner. And we had a factory. And we taught kids and parents to do role reversal. And the kids were the bosses and the parents were the workers. And so I had that job. And that was probably the best job I've ever had in my life. But you know, I mean, so I've had like a mixture, but I did temp jobs for a long time. So, I mean, I could talk about this for 10 days. Boring. However, that said, I know how I feel. I know how I feel and what drives me. And usually it's connecting with other people. It's connecting with other people. And I knew this, and it was entertainment and comedy. So I knew when I was 5 years old and watching, you know, the Beatles or the Ed Sullivan Show or the Mike Douglas Show or some of these performers on TV, that that's what I wanted to do. And then I realized what I really wanted to do was I really wanted to help people feel things. And so if I could do both, that would be the place.
Oh, that's amazing. I love that.
Yeah. That would be the
place. So what do we do for kids?
Let's do a role play. Let's do a role play where, because you say, you know, the immediately thing that comes to mind is it comes out of frustration. Like if I'm a kid, let's say I'm a little bit older, let's say I'm a teen and I had a problem with my test or with a relationship. And then I come home and I'm frustrated and I'm beating myself up and then maybe you can come in and because these transitional things can lead to great things. To great moments. And maybe there's a way that we can interact that way.
That sounds good. Okay. So you want to do, let's do test or subject, right?
Okay.
That like maybe means nothing. Give me a subject that means nothing to you.
Chemistry.
Okay. That means nothing to me too. Okay. Okay. Hold on. I'll try it. I think that the goal is going to be helping kids connect what they're learning to something bigger in the world because there's like such a disconnection, you know?
Right.
There's such a disconnection that they have no context sometimes and it becomes meaningless.
Right. 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 So,
like,
okay.
Why do I have to learn this? It's stupid, basically.
Yeah. Okay, good. Well, that gives a good... Yeah, that's okay. So I'm telling you, I'm coming into the house and I'm telling you.
Let's see what happens when these creatures encounter one another in the wild.
So I don't want to do this anymore. I mean, I hate this class. I hate this teacher.
Hey,
I hate
what's
it.
Going
I'm sick
on?
Of it. I'm sick of it. Well, we, you know, chemistry again. The teacher, you know, he's so mean to everybody. And it's like we have all this homework and I can't do it and I don't get it. And I don't understand it. And everybody else is getting it. And I'm not getting it. And I'm sick of it.
Oh, it sounds like you're really tired of this, huh?
Yes, I'm sick. I don't want to go anymore. I'm just going to start skipping that class because I can't take it. I'm going to start skipping it.
Okay. I hear you. I can hear you're so frustrated about this that you're
yes.
just, you're at the, yeah, you're at your wit's end.
I don't,
like
don't
want to
do it anymore. Yeah, I'm not going to do it. I'm just not going to do it. Why do it?
Okay, I totally hear you, but like, can we just pick this apart a little bit? You know, I like to pick things apart, right?
Uh-huh.
Like I pick apart everything. I pick apart my food. Can we pick it apart? It'll be fun. I promise.
Okay. Now, wait, this isn't going to be one of these techniques, is it?
Okay, I promise. It won't be a technique. I promise. Okay. But let's just pick it apart. Okay. So look, clearly your headline that I'm hearing, like if this were a newspaper, would be like, I hate chemistry. I'm not going back.
Ever.
Right?
Yes.
Okay. But what's the story underneath the headline? There must be a story. If you were a journalist and you were writing a story, like what, or you're a detective and you have clues. Can you give me some clues?
Well, chemistry sucks.
What part of it? Okay. So chemistry sucks.
Yeah.
Okay. What part of it sucks?
Well, I don't understand the equations. I don't understand what he's trying to get at. And I don't care. It's not even, I don't understand. I don't care.
Okay. So it sounds like you're saying that you don't care, right?
Yeah.
All right. And that the equations are confusing. So you're frustrated because you don't, yeah. It's like, yeah, it's going above what you feel like you can understand right now.
Yeah. And it seems like all the people around me, they're like into it. They can they get it somehow and I don't get it.
Okay, we're going to pick that apart now. So when you're working on an equation and you're looking at it, where do you get stuck?
Well, I'm trying to get the right answer and I can't figure out how to get there. It's all too fast. And also, I don't really, it's like a foreign language. I don't really understand it.
Okay. It's really hard to understand. Okay. When you're looking at the equation and you don't really understand and you get frustrated, is it right away? Like you open the book, you see it and you're like, oh, forget it. I'm not doing that.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But have you ever actually done an equation in chemistry? Have you done one or have you seen it worked out on the board? I'm sure.
I've seen it worked out on the board, but as soon as I get in there, it's like, I don't even want to be there.
Okay. Let me ask you a question. Let's say I waved a magic wand and all of a sudden you knew how to do the equations, right? All of a sudden, whatever was happening, your brain made the connections and your hand starts moving on the paper and you're getting it right. Let's just live in that world for a second. Then what would change for you?
I can't even, I don't even know because I guess I would like it. I'd be like everybody else.
Okay. You know what I want to talk about for one second?
Yeah.
Do you remember last fall when we went outside and the leaves were piling up and they're all different colors, like they are in Boston?
Yeah.
Like they're like all different colors in the fall.
Yeah.
Remember when you were like stomping on them and jumping on them just like you were a little kid?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. You know, those leaves changing colors, that's chemistry. Why that happens, right?
Huh. Yeah.
That's something that you're actually super interested in. And you know, the other thing that's kind of interesting is that you love to cook.
Well, that's true. That's true.
You love that. I mean, I know a lot of your friends don't know that, but I know it because I'm your mom.
That's true.
I mean, that's chemistry. Chemistry is at the heart of cooking. Chemical reactions. Like, I don't know why you put baking soda into those muffin things that you make, but I do know that it's chemistry that makes them rise.
Wow. I guess I don't really think about that and don't really associate it with those equations,
Totally.
I don't really get that. But if you say it's chemistry, maybe there's a different, maybe there's a different way. Maybe there's another way.
So there's two things I want you to try, okay?
Okay.
So the first thing is that obviously, you told me that the headline was chemistry sucks and I don't want to do it and I hate chemistry and, it's too hard. But I think that if you were able to do the equations and that you were able to understand how those equations applied to the world that you live in, I think you might actually change your mind. Maybe, So... Yeah. You need to do two things. One is the equations. You're at a place, right? Let's do it on a piece of paper. Okay, there's two dots right next to each other. Well, one on the left side of the paper, one on the right side of the paper.
Mm-hmm.
The dot on the left side is, I don't know how to do these equations.
Okay.
The dot on the right side is, I do know how to do these equations. Now we're going to draw a line from one dot to the other. Okay, I saw that you did it. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Now on that line, that line's like a learning line, right? On this line, what are all of the things that we might be able to do to get from this point on the left to this point on the right? What can we do?
Well, maybe I can think about the leaves and think about the cooking and think about the chemistry is different things, and maybe it means something. Maybe I look at chemistry that it's not just equations, that it's all around me. It could be. If you say leaves and then you say cooking, I guess I can look at that stuff. I can look at pictures and think about how it all works, you know, maybe.
I think it's going to be more fun for you if you understand the equation that you're working on, what it means. And so I think that that's something that you can talk to your teacher about. I mean, Mr. Clooney's pretty nice. He seems pretty approachable. I don't know. He's your teacher. Isn't it? He's someone you can talk to?
He's pretty tough, you know? And,
yeah.
And I guess I can try.
Okay. So I want you to do two things. Let's just try. Because look, at the end of the day, if it doesn't work, you're just back where you started right now, which is you don't want to do any of it.
Mm-hmm.
But try two things for me. One is talk to Mr. Clooney and see if he can help you understand what the meaning of the equation is. What's the point of it? Because I think that that will give you a little bit of excitement in working on it. Because right now you're just shut down. I don't want to work on it. It's too hard.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Well, I don't, you know, when you talk about leaves, it changes, you know, it's sort of, you know, how they change and how food changes and things like that. I guess
you love to cook. That is literally chemistry. Maybe he can give you some cooking equations, you know?
Well, maybe I can, maybe I can just ask him. I can tell him.
Maybe we can look it up together if you want to.
Okay. Okay.
Okay.
There might be some videos too that we can watch about it. I don't know. You know, maybe some science. Okay. Well, all right.
Isn't it beautiful when different species can live in harmony?
Well, I'll
all right. So not everything goes that well. Sometimes the chemistry book gets tossed at your head.
Right.
Or I don't even know if they have chemistry books anymore. So maybe it's the iPad that gets tossed at your head. I'm not really sure. But I think that what happens in school, you know, and there's so many other elements to this role play. Obviously, maybe there's demotivation because maybe there's too much going on or there's burnout. But you heard in the conversation that the child who was doing, so Ed playing the child in the role play, was feeling overwhelmed. And once we feel completely overwhelmed, like the skill is above our skill level, and then we are not in a state of flow, obviously, when we're learning. So I think, you know, flow is a really important concept when it comes to kids being able to do things. That idea of the thing that you're doing, if it's too hard, it makes you anxious. If it's too easy, it makes you bored. And the magical spot in between is flow. And then the other thing that we're really trying to get across in this podcast is the idea of connection to bigger things and meaning, right? So, you know, I said leaves and cooking, but it could be anything. I think kids, when they're in school, really need to understand the point of what they're doing. And sometimes they need to understand it a lot and all the time. And there needs to be repetition. Why do I have to do math? I'm just going to use a calculator. You know, this is meaningless in my life. So then we need to show them why it's meaningful, you know, and what's meaningful about it, aside from saying, well, I did it when I was a kid, so you have to do it now.
I think that that's pretty interesting that you can start with, and it's really always a good place to start. What do you love to do? What do you love to do?
What do you love to do? What do you love to do? Yeah.
Because that's always a good place to start. And then from there, you know, you can make, there's meaning that comes out of that. You know, why do you like to cook? You know, well, this is sort of like an equation, isn't it? This plus this equals you loving to cook. You know, and however you relate it, but you start to get to people. I guess the point is that you go from being shut down to being opened up.
Yes, absolutely. Well, we wrote a really great story for those of you interested in teaching your kids about meaning. It's actually called Dawn, The Dawn of Meaning, and it's in our GoZen shop. So you would go to gozen.com/shop, and you would be able to find it in our digital products. It's called The Dawn of Meaning, and it is a story. So we teach kids these concepts using stories. So it's a story, and then we have exercises. And for teachers who purchase it, there are also lesson plans and group questions.
Well, that's great. That's really interesting. I was looking through actually last night, and I see a lot of new stuff in there, a lot of new material.
Yeah, there's a lot to teach. But I think we're going to have to wrap up. So, Ed, you want to tell everyone about where they can find us?
Yes.
They obviously have found us if they're listening to us, but if they need to find us again.
But you know what? The other thing is, please share this. You know, if you like what we're talking about, or you have questions, or you have comments, this is a two-way street. You can reach us. You can actually reach us at gozen.com/dearanxiety. gozen.com/dearanxiety. You can write a note. You can post a video. You can send us a picture. you can tell us about something that's going on in your life and something that you're trying to work on, or something that works for you to help other people. Let's help each other. You can listen on wherever you get your podcasts. You can subscribe at bit.ly/Dear Anxiety. You can find that on iTunes, or maybe you go to Stitcher, or maybe you get your podcast from Google Play, wherever you can find us. It's just Dear Anxiety. And it's great to have you listening, and, you know, keep coming back. It works if you work it. And whether you find meaning today or tomorrow or next week or in 40 years, whatever you're doing, it's always good to consider that, you know, doing what you love, being what you love to do is a good question. And those questions that Rini asked about Ikigai, those are really interesting. And you can ask yourself any one of those questions at any time. It's good to do. Gives your perspective. At any rate, I'm Ed Krasnick.
I'm Rini Jain.
Keep coming back. It works if you work it. We'll see you next time.
Thanks, guys.